This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala Sayyidil Mursaleen. Wa ala alihi wa ashabihi at-tahirin ma dama ma fis samawati wal ardin. Rabbi shrah li sadri wa yassir li amri. Wa hlul uqadatan min lisani yafqahu qawli. Allahumma allimna ma yanfa'una. وانفعنا بما علمتنا وزدنا علما اللهم إنا نسألك علما ينفعنا ويرفعنا اللهم إنا نسألك علما نافعا ورزقا واسعا وعملا متقبلا وشفاء من كل داء نوينا التعلم والتعليم والتذكر والتذكير والإفادة والاستفادة والحث على التمسك بكتاب الله وسنة رسوله صلى الله عليه وآله وصحبه وسلم وبعده السلام عليكم ورحمة الله تعالى وبركاته الحمد لله by the grace and mercy of Allah سبحانه وتعالى. We have reached lesson number 22. We continuing our discussion on the shurut of salah. As mentioned in the previous lesson, the word shurut is the plural of the word shart. Shart is technically defined as ma yalzamu min adamihi al-adam. If it is not found, then the act cannot be found. The basic example that we gave was that of wudu. If a person does not have wudu, then a person cannot have the prayer. In the absence of wudu, there will be the absence of the prayer, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows best. Ba'fadl mentions six conditions. We had discussed the first five conditions in lesson number 21. We discuss condition number six today bi'idhnillah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It reads as follows. Wa ma'rifatu فروض الصلاة وسننها. Another condition in order for the prayer to be considered as valid would be معرفة, knowledge, فروض الصلاة, of the compulsory acts, وسننها, and the recommended acts. What this basically means is a person must know which aspects of the prayer are compulsory and which aspects of the prayer is recommended. So the text now reads as follows: the legal ruling of the acts of salah must be known. So if the legal rulings of the acts of salah are not known, it is not known in a manner that invalidates the prayer. An example of that would be when a person considers a given fard act to be sunnah, to be recommended. An example of that would be the Fatiha. We know the Fatiha is fard. لا صلاة إلا بفاتحة الكتاب. There is no prayer without the opening chapter recited in that unit of prayer. In other words, you must recite the opening chapter in every unit of the prayer. So it is fard. If a person considers the recitation of the Fatiha as recommended, then his salah will be invalidated. Why? Because he considers a given act, which is compulsory, he considers that compulsory act to be recommended, and this would invalidate his prayer. Why? Because the condition of the validity of the prayer is that a person must know the legal ruling of the acts of the salah, whether it is fard or whether it is sunnah on the other hand. Our scholars unpack this particular phenomenon and they ask the question, what if a person considers all of them to be fard? So in other words, he doesn't draw a distinction between a compulsory act and a recommended act. Rather, he considers the entire prayer in its entirety, every single act. He considers every single act to be compulsory. What is the ruling of such a person's prayer? We go to the next slide, bi'idhnillah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and it reads as follows. So I've recorded this particular question, which I mentioned a moment ago. What if a person considers all the acts of the prayer to be fard, or he simply generally considers some to be compulsory and some to be recommended? So here are two cases that we are tackling now. The person considers every act. So he considers Takbiratul Ihram is compulsory. He considers the Basmala to be compulsory. He considers the Fatiha to be compulsory. He considers the recitation of Quran after the Fatiha is compulsory. In other words, he considers the prayer in its entirety to be compulsory. In other words, all the acts, all the individual acts, he considers them to be compulsory. Or alternatively, his construction is, look, some of the acts are compulsory and some of them are recommended, but he doesn't categorize any of the acts. He just knows from the outset that some are compulsory and some are recommended. How does this construction impact on the validity or otherwise of his prayer? So our scholars say, look, here we need to have a bifurcation. We have two groupings. The first grouping is, if this belief is held by a lay person, and then our scholars say, Salatu Sahihatun. A lay person, if he considers all the acts within the prayer to be compulsory, or he considers some of them to be compulsory and some others to be recommended, but he doesn't categorize them, then his prayer is valid. As opposed to that, as you see on the slide, as opposed to that, what if the person in question happens to be an alim? So the first thing we need to do is we need to give a definition of an alim. And here an interesting definition is given for an alim. It reads as follows. Man ishtaghala bil ilmi zamanan, a person that engages in the pursuit of knowledge for such a time period, taqtadhi al-'ada, that generally he should be in a position, ay yumayyiza bayna al-fardi wa sunnah, he should be in a position whereby he is able to distinguish between a mandatory act, an obligatory act, a compulsory act, and a recommended act. Such a person is classified as an alim. So you've been studying, you've been reading the Mukhtasar al-Latif, Bafazl's short abridgment. And let's say on completion, you are considered in light of this definition to be a scholar. Meaning that you've engaged in knowledge to such a degree that generally you should be able to distinguish what is a recommended act and what is a compulsory act. So if this is a person's condition, then, and he now considers all of the acts of the prayer to be compulsory, or he considers some to be compulsory to the exclusion of others, but he doesn't categorize them specifically. According to Ibn Hajar, Ibn Hajar says that his prayer is valid, no question asked. According to Imam Ar-Ramli, this person needs to be able to distinguish or have the belief that all of them are compulsory. If he believes that all of them are compulsory, then his prayer is valid. But if he simply believes in the distinction, some of them are compulsory and some of them are recommended, and he's considered to be a scholar, then his prayer is not going to be valid, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows best. So according to Imam Ramli, he will only be let off the hook if he considers all of them to be compulsory, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows best. We go on to the balance of the conditions. I mentioned in last week's lesson, or in the previous lesson, that the conditions mentioned by Fadl are six. In terms of the explanatory notes, they add a few other conditions. We're going to read through them very quickly, bi-idhnillah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So number seven, al-ilmu bi-fardiyyatiha, fala tasihhu salatu man huwa mutaraddidun fi fardiyyatiha amman i'taqada anna sunnatun. The seventh condition is a person must be knowledgeable of the obligatory nature of the prayer. So we have five daily prayers. A person is doubting as to whether Maghrib is compulsory or not, and he prays with that frame of mind. Is his prayer going to be valid? No. A person must know that this prayer is a mandatory prayer. It is a fard prayer. Alternatively, he may believe it to be a recommended prayer. Nawaitu sunnat salat al-Maghrib, a person says, I intend to pray the recommended prayer of Maghrib. His prayer is not going to be valid. Number eight, which is somewhat of an obvious one, it reads, ijtinabul mubtilat. A person must steer clear of those things that invalidate the prayer. So eating, it is in order for your salah to be considered valid, you must stay away from those things that will invalidate your prayer. Eating intentionally, talking intentionally, etc. Number nine, al-Islam. A person is praying in order for his prayer to be considered valid. He must be a Muslim, he must remain a Muslim. If a person turns apostate during his prayer, Allah forbid, the person's prayer is invalid. And if he accepts Islam again, he will have to repeat the prayer, and Allah SWT knows best. Number 10, At-tamyiz, the person must have discerning ability. And number 11, Al-ilmu bi kayfiyatiha, a person must have knowledge as regards to the manner of performing the prayer. Look, a person could know in terms of theory what all the integrals are, what all the conditions are, but he has no idea in terms of the way or the manner that the prayer should be executed. This might sound funny. What comes to mind would be a story of Mullah Qari. He was an expert, a jurist. It is narrated that when he came to Mecca, so he knows the theory, but in terms of the practice, there's always this discrepancy between the theory and the practice. So when it came time to circumambulate around the Kaaba, as opposed to going anti-clockwise, he went clockwise. So very importantly, one of the conditions of the prayer is a person must be familiar with the manner in terms of the prayer, and Allah SWT knows best. Earlier on, we had discussed the condition of satrul awra, that the awra must be covered. Here, in terms of the explanatory notes, some detail is given as regards to the awra. We discuss the awra and we look at the literal meaning. The literal meaning of the word awra would be an-naqs, which could be translated as deficiency. Technically, what does the term awra mean? Now, the term awra can be utilized in two chapters generally, in the chapter dealing with the prayer and in the chapter dealing with marriage. When the term awra is used in the chapter of the prayer, what does it refer to? It refers to ala ma yajibu satru, that which is necessary to cover. The same term awra, when it's used in the chapter dealing with marriage, then it refers to ma yahrumu nadruhu, that which is impermissible to look at, and Allah SWT knows best. Now, awra, which we translate as nakedness, is somewhat of a relative phenomenon depending on the persons in question, and sometimes also depending in terms of circumstances. So the first issue which we're going to be dealing with would be the awra of a male person. What is his nakedness? In other words, what needs to be covered in terms of the prayer in order for his prayer to be considered as valid? He must cover his awra. What constitutes his nakedness? So we're going to look at the awra of a male, and we're going to be looking at the awra of a slave girl. And the reason why we pair them together is because the nakedness in relation to a male person and that of a slave girl is exactly the same. So the text reads now, وَعَوْرَةُ الرَّجُلُ وَعَوْرَةُ الرَّجُلِ وَالْأَمَةِ فِي الصَّلَاةِ, the nakedness of a man and a slave girl in terms of the prayer, مَا بَيْنَ سُرَّتِهِمَا وَرُكْبَتِهِمَا, the area that lies between the navel and the knees. Now, in terms of covering one's nakedness, it's the area that lies between the navel and the knee. So very importantly, a key word here would be between. So the actual navel and the actual knees are excluded and does not form part of one's nakedness. However, it would be important to cover a part of the navel and a part of the knee, simply because of the rule that says مَا لَا يَتِمُ الْوَاجِبِ إِلَّا بِهِ فَهُوَ وَاجِبٌ, that which a compulsory act cannot be fulfilled except through it also becomes compulsory. So you must cover the area between the navel and the knee. And in order to do that, you need to cover a part of the knee. So therefore, covering part of the knee becomes compulsory, and Allah SWT knows best. That's the first consideration. The second consideration would be that this particular rule of covering one's nakedness, it applies to an adult and to a child. In relation to a child, the prayer is not compulsory upon the child. But should the child decide to pray, then he needs to meet all of the conditions. And one of the conditions is that his nakedness must be covered. The same rule applies to a free person or a slave girl. So we've covered now the nakedness of a male person and the nakedness of a slave girl. The next issue which we look at would be the awra of a lady. The nakedness of a lady in relation to the prayer. وَعَوْرَةُ الْحُرَّةِ عِنْدَ مَحَارِمِهَا. Let's first look at her nakedness in relation to her relatives that she's not permitted to marry. The Arabic term used or employed to refer to them would be the word maharim. وَعَوْرَةُ الْحُرَّةِ, the nakedness of a free lady in relation to her relatives that she's unable to marry, referring to her male relatives and also referring to other human folk, and when she's all on her own, مَا بَيْنَ سُرَّةِ وَرُكْبَةِ, would be the area that lies between the navel and the knee. So a relationship, brother and sister, what must be covered? What can a brother not look at of his sister?
He cannot look at the area which lies between the navel and the knee. It is permissible to look at other areas, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows best. There's also an interesting added note here in terms of the nakedness of a lady, of a free lady, in relation to non-Muslim woman or open transgressing Muslim woman. What is the nakedness in relation to them? Our scholars say that which does not become apparent whilst working. So when a lady is working, what becomes apparent? Her head would be apparent and open, in other words, not covered. Her face would be uncovered. Her neck would be uncovered. Her arms would be uncovered. And her feet, her legs up until her knees would be uncovered. So everything besides that, in relation to a non-Muslim woman, would be considered her nakedness, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows best. We go on to the last slide for today's lesson, bi'idhnillah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We had spoken and mentioned earlier on that of the conditions of the validity of the prayer is that the person must be free from all types of impurities. We're going to look at concrete impurities now. If a person has blood on their clothing or on their body, or on the place where they are praying, then the salah is invalid. However, there's an exception to those particular rules. The Arabic term used, if my memory serves me correctly, would be al-ma'fuwat, that which is overlooked. I've reproduced the English translation here. What is overlooked? So it's impure, absolutely, but it is overlooked. Concession is made in that particular regard. وَيُعْفَى أَنْ دَمِي مَا لَا نَفْسَ لَهُ سَائِلَةً. The blood of an animal that does not have flowing blood, a mosquito, doesn't have flowing blood. You're praying, a mosquito settles on your face, and you whack the mosquito, and as a result, the mosquito blood is on your face. So is it blood? Yes. Is it impure? Yes. However, it is overlooked. وَأَنْ وَنِيمِ الذُّبَابِ, the excreta that of a fly. وَأَنْ دَمِ الْبَثَرَاتِ, blood that oozes out of a pimple that you may have on your face or on any body part. قَلِيلُ وَكَثِيرُ, a little of it or a lot of it. وَأَنْ قَيْحِ الدَّمَامِيلِ, a person has an abscess and pus issues forth therefrom. That is also overlooked. However, when it comes to much of these impurities which are overlooked, it is overlooked when certain conditions are met. What are those conditions? The first condition is that Allah yakhtalita bi ajnabin, it mustn't mix with any other form of impurity, number one. Number two is it mustn't go beyond the place of exit. So when that blood comes out and then it settles in the vicinity, it mustn't go beyond that. And also it mustn't be due to the person's actions himself. For example, you have a pimple, but then you scratch the pimple, and as a result of your scratching, blood issues therefrom. That, if normally without your interference, blood oozes therefrom, it is overlooked. However, if it's due to your own doing, then it's not going to be overlooked, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows best. The last issue would be وَيُعْفَى أَنْ قَلِيلٍ مِنْ دَمٍ أَجْنَبِي, somebody else's blood falls on you whilst you are praying. A little of that is overlooked, except إِلَّا الْكَلْبُ الْخَنْزِيرِ, except two instances, and that is blood that of a dog and a pig, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows best. This brings us to an end of lesson number 22. Our next lesson is number 23, where we're going to be dealing with the compulsory acts of the salah. Till we meet again, barakallahu feekum jami'an. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh.